Welcome to CEO to Rainmaker, a practical small business educational podcast designed to increase an owner's executive skills, raise profits, and achieve long-term sustainability. And now your host, Gene Valdez.
Episode number 52, Miguel's Restaurant, a family success story with Javier Vasquez, CEO. To kick off the month of October of highlighting and celebrating successful Hispanic entrepreneurs, I'm starting with Miguel's Mexican Restaurants. My guest today is President and CEO Javier Vasquez, and I might be a little bit biased, but their food tastes very much like my mother used to make for my sisters when we were kids. Miguel's California Mexican Cocina was started by Javier's parents, Mike and Mary Vasquez, in Corona almost 50 years ago in 1973. I just love Mary's title, which is Chief Recipe Officer. Mary was raised in central Mexico, where she learned the secrets of her homestyle cuisine, which are the foundation of Miguel's today. Mike and Mary opened a quick service concept in Corona in 1975 called Miguel's Jr. They were immediately successful, and this event kickstarted their long-term success over the next 47 years. Today, in 2022, Miguel's is a multi-million dollar operation with 22 locations, 21 quick serve one restaurant in the Inland Empire and Orange County. Miguel's Restaurants and the family have received numerous awards over the years. Before I bring on Javier, a brief little bio. Alongside his parents and siblings in 1975 at the first location, he has served as president and CEO over the next 20 years. He has guided Miguel's explosive growth during this period. Javier Vasquez was named Family Business Entrepreneur of the Year in 2007. That's a distinguished award. And he earned his MBA from USC and resides in Southern California. So let's start. Let's bring out Javier. Javier, thank you so much for bringing all of your wisdom and knowledge of the restaurant industry and, most importantly, your time. So what I'd like to do is start with this question, if we could, Javier. Miguel's, in my reading of the bio and the company literature, is very much a family business. Do you believe that has been a positive or a neutral role as president? Would you manage the company any differently if you were not the son of the original founders?
Well, a few things. On my bio, I was born in 1974, so I didn't work in 1975 because I was 21 years old. So, sure, if I would make me work at 1 years old. I started working at 11. But the family portion of the business, what it does help guide us as we develop and grow the business. You know, as you develop a concept from 1 to 22, the culture, the business can change, and having family involved in certain capacities helps maintain the culture and what my parents started out and the foundation of what we started out. So it acts as guide rails. The leadership team consists of myself and my sister, Sylvia. My other two siblings are in different roles within the organization, which is also helpful also because we're not, you know, all together at one time. So we each have our own disciplines. And that's been helpful from when we start working together on a professional level. We all worked together in the stores as children, and we all went to college. But when we came back from college, that's what I call professional working, coming back, not so much working, you know, in the stores, just hourly employees. So I think that they're having the family around. My mom's still active. When you said the chief recipe officer, that's very accurate. She still continues to develop recipes for us, and that's been part of our success. So having my mom around in that capacity, you know, really guarding the recipes, and my other siblings in different capacities still makes us a family business. And that's helpful. And sometimes it is difficult because, you know, you want to be able to be a family outside of work, but the family conversation always creeps towards business. So we try our best to not talk about business when we're not around the restaurants all the time.
Got it. Okay. So maybe you can share with my listeners on this one, Javier. Restaurants and food establishments were hit really hard by COVID. What changes did you guys make to survive and flourish?
I think that COVID, the last couple of years, has been very difficult for any business. I know restaurants are obviously hit the hardest, but any business, any CEO, any leader of a company had to pivot on a daily basis sometimes. And that's what we did. We had leadership team meetings for every day at 2 o'clock for the first, I would say, from March all the way to the end of 2020. And because literally we would have a plan day, you know, Monday, but Monday afternoon or Tuesday, that plan changed. And we had to adjust accordingly every day. And that puts a lot of pressure on your systems when you do that, and your people in the store, because again, they're frontline employees working with the customers, and they too have families, and they too have to understand. So it's a balancing act. So what we learned, and now that we have a crisis, we have to adjust, and the plan we make can change, and that's okay. There are times when the governor will issue his mandates on Saturday afternoon. So that made it very difficult to make adjustments, but we would have to be on Sunday morning to adapt for the plans he made on Saturday. So that happened frequently. And over time, we did pull back from, you know, every day to in 2021 went to every other day. So it did scale back, but having effective communication, having a leadership team that understands pivoting is critical, and having an operations team that understands that although we may have said something today, that can change tomorrow. And that was critical to our success. Now, we're fortunate because we're in a drive-through space, so that was helpful. We did, unfortunately, had to close one restaurant, full service, and we have not reopened it because we can't because of the economy. But on the full service business, on the quick service business, we're fortunate. You know, besides, we have one in Galleria Tyler, which is a non-drive-through location. But besides that, we were able to serve our customers, and we did not lay off any employees during the pandemic.
Really? Amazing.
We repurposed them, and that's because we had no layoffs. And we know that was a risk, financial risk, but we felt that it was prudent for us when the economy does turn back, you know, we'd be ready for that. Now, if you recall, when the initial shutdown happened, it was going to be 2 weeks, 1 month maybe, and that kept going. And that uncertainty made us feel that we need to protect our employees as best we can. That way, when we are able to open again, we can't open at full strength.
Okay. So your recommendations to business owner listeners right now was detailed planning and understanding that you have to pivot during COVID.
And communication.
Detailed planning.
Right. And communication. I always communicate. You have to be, you know, communicate constantly with your area within the organization as best as possible. And that was also how we were able to succeed.
Okay. How many people do you employ now?
Around 750 employees.
How many?
750.
750?
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. Do you have a new location? Are you thinking about a new location?
Yes, we are opening our 22nd drive-thru location in Santa Ana in June of 2023.
Oh, that should do well in Santa Ana.
Yes.
Okay. So I can't think of a more competitive niche than fast food Mexican food. How do you stay competitive? Do you make all the strategic decisions yourself? Do you have a mentor? How do you do it? How do you stay ahead of the curve?
Well, one thing is we deliver a premium product in a drive-through space, which is not very common. A lot of our competitors, direct competitors, are not drive-throughs. They're sit-downs or mom-and-pops or mostly not. You know, we are 70% of our business is drive-through convenience. It's a convenient model and delivering quality Mexican food that based on my mom's recipes. So those two right there are probably the first two things I would say in the space. The third thing is innovation on recipes that my mom has. So what we found, or you see now, the palate has changed. So a lot of traditional menu items that mom would make at home are now more mainstream. So now we're putting those items into the restaurants, that's been successful. And also, I think our employees are at an advantage. Having customer service, friendly service, those kind of things have always been one of the staples of our business. We can compare it sometimes to In-N-Out, and not so much because, obviously, hamburgers and Mexican food, it's just our friendly staff. And so that's our comparative advantage, that we have a friendly staff. So between, you know, commitment to our recipe consistency, my mom's foundation of good food and innovation of new items and friendly service, and being in drive-through. That's how we're competitive in this space.
Well, I have two questions. One is, I've eaten at your Ontario location many times, and it's not fast food. It's quality food served fast. To me, there's a difference.
Correct. And so we say we're QSR plus. In our space, when you put a drive-through on your building, you're drive-through. That's the nature of the business. But that has evolved. So I think about 10 years ago, during the last crash in 07, 08, a lot of chefs left the full-service space because of the economy, and they went into the QSR space or even the quick casual space. So you'll see that a lot of brands upgraded their food quality in that time period because of the economy. And I feel that we were always doing that, but it became more commonplace in the last 10 years. And you see it more and more as other brands who traditionally were not in the QSR space or drive-through space are going to the drive-through space. And I think that's the economy or the pandemic has accelerated that because of people's wanting convenience and maybe not being comfortable being inside a restaurant all the time, but they still want quality food. So that has, I think, opened up opportunity for other concepts to come into the QSR space with drive-throughs.
Okay, so it sounds to me, is there more recipes in your mother's head that she hasn't rolled out yet? She's just waiting, she states them?
Yes.
Correct. That seems to be your secret weapon, is her authentic recipes.
Yes, so we have...
There's more to come.
There's more to come. So we, in our full service space, we'll do, next year we have probably 4 or 5 new items planned. In the QSR space, we have quite a few. We're going to test them out. We have quite a few planned. You're absolutely right. It's based on variations of our recipes from that we grew up with at home or just new trends. So for example, birria. You know, birria is a very common now meat that you see a lot of places. And traditionally, birria is lamb. And if I told my mom I want to put birria in the store, she told me, well, I don't know if lamb will do well for us. I go, Mom, we're going to do beef birria. She goes, well, that's not traditional. I understand, but, you know, the trend right now is beef birria. So she developed beef birria. It's a great product, but it's not her style, but that's what she figured out how to do it and makes great birria now. But there's other things we're doing. For example, we're putting a pozole in the stores. Pozole, again, it's a traditional item that was served. We grew up with it. It's a holiday item. Now we serve it every holiday in our QSR space, which is not normal, but that's what we're doing. And so that's given her the opportunity to showcase some of her style of food that she grew up with also, that we grew up with, that now the palate has changed and people are more open to those kind of products.
Gotcha. So do you or any other people in your family, do you watch what the competition is doing, or do you not consider the Taco Bells, the Del Tacos, the Pollo Locos as competitors, because their quality is just can't even touch your quality.
I think they watch us, but that's me thinking that way. But I always joke, we talk about innovative items, and either we're ahead of the curve or before the curve, but then we see it on a competitor's menu really quickly. So I think they have a fire in our business, our building, but that's just me being optimistic. But of course, yes, I watch two things. I watch national brands for technology and service style. So, for example, I watch and visit Chick-fil-A and I watch them visit In-N-Out because they're the best at what they do when it comes to quality customer service. Different model, but they offer what they do with their customer service is top of class. Then, of course, I watch our competitors or even all competitors, see what they're doing style-wise, food-wise, and those kind of things. For example, Bedia is in our full service business, and we're thinking about putting it on a quick service, but we're not sure yet. So we have to figure out if we can execute, because what happens sometimes, we're still in the convenience business. And when you have items that aren't conveniently done, you slow down. So it's a balancing act on the QSR space, because if I put an item in there, for example, it takes cooks 10 minutes to make, well, that defeats the whole purpose of being convenient.
Right.
Execute it and still be convenient. And that's where we test things. So you asked me a question, I didn't really answer it. We have my mom develops a menu, a recipe. Then my sister mass produces it. And then we test it in a few markets and then see how it does. And then if it does well, we roll it out company-wide. That's a process we have. And we get customer feedback and then guest customer feedback and employee feedback. And then we say, okay, that can work. Then we roll it out. That didn't work, or because it's hard to execute, or this doesn't work well, then we don't do it. So there's a process we have. That's how we're still a family business. My mom makes a recipe. My sister mass produces it. And then we test it.
Got it. And is this sort of strategy which you've used for 47 years? Because that's a heck of a long time to stay in business.
No, that's a discipline that's been put in by my leadership team, that we have other people that come from other organizations where there's a structure to this. Back in the day, we would just, hey, that's a good part, roll it out. And it was easier to roll out when you have 6-10 stores. When you get to scale 20 above stores, it's more difficult to roll out and be effective and execute well. So we have to have training behind it and those kind of things. So we have to discipline ourselves not to do things on the whim, but to do things methodical, with process in place and what's the attendant result. That's how we determine. So there could be an item, for example, my family, we're not bakers. We don't do desserts well. We don't. It's a different skill set. So we're testing a dessert from a third party. That wasn't our preference, but I know our limitations. Our limitations is we're not dessert. We're not making desserts. That's not in our wheelhouse. So we went to another party, tested it. It's doing pretty good. You know, but that's the first time we actually offer an item that we didn't create, because I know our limitations, what we can and cannot do.
I've always believed, Javier, that a highly successful entrepreneur will make mistakes, and they learn from their bad things, they learn from their good things. As you look back in your years as CEO for the last 20 years, does there some mistakes that stick out to you that you should have done? And then conversely, what are some of the great decisions you've made that really helped, that you feel prideful about?
Of course, I think that as an entrepreneur, making mistakes is normal. Sometimes small business owners don't want to expose themselves to or commit that they made mistakes. So I made, you know, of course, I have made mistakes in my role. And some of the mistakes I made is not having the proper leadership in place and not having the proper training in place to grow a business fast.
Got it.
I think that those two things can deteriorate business over time, because, you know, they're not growing business is fun and exciting. You want growth and open more locations, but you don't have the roots and foundation. The foundation cracks, and we've experienced that with some of our lack of controls in place. And we see some of our quality deteriorate because we don't have the proper training and proper leadership in place. And so I think those are probably my mistakes, understanding that what's best for the business sometimes is this depends on, this person can be a good person, but it's not best for the business and leadership and those kind of things. Right. And having the documentation and training, because I would say you have 5 things to do every day. I think training has to be up there, like number 2 or 3, but sometimes it's 5 or 6 because it's not the fun thing to do. And documentation of processes. So I think lack of those 3 things, you know, leadership, training, and documentation processes will deteriorate the brand over time. It won't happen immediately, but it will over time. And as you expand your concept, the things that we've done well is we grew into Orange County. And I say that because Orange County is also very competitive. We're actually nearer to Orange County market than in an Empire market. So we're doing really well in those markets and growing your brand. Like you said earlier, in a competitive market, you have to stand out. Because then you're not when you come to Corona Norco or this market in Empire, we've been around, like you said, 40 some years. When you go out to other markets, it's you're the new kid in the market. And those customers have developed a profile of what Mexican food should be like, because that's what they grew up with in that market.
Sure.
We have to get to the prior food and then to come back. And we've done that successfully in Orange County.
How many locations do you have in Orange County now?
4. And we have one, the fifth one will be the Santa next year.
Okay. This has just been really great information, Javier. So, you know, we're running out of time. So if an aspiring entrepreneur came to you and said, hey, listen, I want to start a business, or I want to do a restaurant drive-by operation, or just a drive-by, you know, any kind of food. I don't know if it'd have to specifically be Mexican food, but what advice would you give a young entrepreneur today who's listening out there that could lead them in the right way?
I am working with an entrepreneur. It's actually a professor And he is, I'm helping him because he wants to establish a restaurant. It's a lamb only restaurant. And he's done all this great research. And I said, okay, well, the first thing I always ask, and I've been asked before this question, and I always say, start with your why, you know, and I refer him to a book, a Simon Sinek book, Start With Your Why. I think that's important to start there. You document your why and then put it away for a day or two, bring it out. If you read it again, that's going to inspire you to do what you want to do. Then the next step is write an outline business plan of what your plan is. Then come and talk to me about how you want the next steps. I've been asked to be a mentor before. I've been asked to do different things. And I always do the same thing. Read this book first, document X, and then write kind of a business plan, outline it. And then we'll sit down and talk about it. Because otherwise, I find that some people have the ideas, but they don't want to do the work ahead of time. And that requires some discipline on the person is to read some documentation, and then document whatever it is. Because it could be anything. It could be food. It could be non-food. And then develop strategy. Because that why statement has to not only inspire you, it has to inspire your employees. And if that does not work, it may work for a single unit, a person that just wants to do one restaurant or one bakery, and they're going to be the operator and they're going to be the manager. That's fine. Then that's a different level if you want to expand this business. So when this gentleman approached me about helping him for his concept, he wants to franchise a concept. I said, fine, but we got to start with the fundamentals and then grow from there. And so that's what I always recommend is just write down why you want to do it. And then put it down paper. I encourage you to read the book, and then outline a business plan. And then we can go from there.
And the why doesn't necessarily have to be money. It could be passion. It could be doing my own thing. It could be a creative outlet. It could be setting up a foundation. You just got to have why, which creates the passion.
Yeah, Simon Sinek, we've been using a lot of his books lately in our company in the last 5 years because we resonate with that, with his how he operates, how he talks. I would refer to him to that, his book, Start With Your Why. Yeah. And because that's why it explains it. If you read the book, it kind of walks you through how to do it. And it just shows me that you're actually thinking about what you want to do and document it. Because a lot of times, you know, I have my nephews come to me, I have a great idea. I sound the same thing. Okay. Write it down on paper, read the book. And sometimes they don't come back. I'm like, well, what am I going to do?
Okay. Well, Javier, we run out of time. I love your food. Keep up the good work. I hope you can make a big presence that, would, in addition to what you've already done in Orange County, because you're certainly a success in the empire. So thank you so much for your time. On your show notes, I will put all your contact information. And I just love your chicken tacos. I'm sorry. I just
and that's one of the best things. Go Children's.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you so much, Javier. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for reaching out. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So that's a wrap, listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give me a like and subscribe. And I will talk to you next Monday with another Hispanic entrepreneur success story. Tune in. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
This has been CEO to Rainmaker with Gene Valdez. To find out more, like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you have questions, email the show. Find that link and others in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time.